wishes.
Thank you. I can say good afternoon already. It's afternoon, Tisha B'av. I think I want to make myself feel at home, so I take my hat off. Normally, people start speaking at the beginning. I would like to start before the beginning. Before beginning, years of journey through hell, eventually turning up in a concentration camp called Gundkirchen, which was absolute mamash hell, Gehenna on this earth. Somebody who was in Auschwitz tells me that also he found it Gundkirchen, absolute Gehenna. Start before the beginning, because some years ago, a prominent person in Manchester criticized somebody who was abroad on the continent. He cut his beard off to hide his Jewishness. Well, he forgot to what it says in the Pyrik, Al Tudin Eschavairach, Ashadugialim Koimoy. Don't judge anybody till you are in his shoe. I'll tell you what happened by us. Erev Shabbos, one Erev Shabbos, two Gestapo, I don't know if you know Gestapo, secret police of the SS, knocks on the door and asks for my father. They want him to go into the headquarters and for an interview. They want to talk to him. My mother says, he's not at home. When will he be in? He should be in about an hour. We shall come back. We know exactly what it means to go into the headquarters of the Gestapo. Once you go there, and they come back 4 hours later, and they tell you the man had an accident, can you bring him home? The Chevra Kedisha will bring him home, and you will make two bruches. One, Buruch Dan Hemes. The second one, Hatov Vameitiv, that he only suffered 4 hours of the most sadistic torture available to a person. Not imaginable, unimaginable torture which can be done. My mother sends me to the barbers where my father was. Erev Shabbos, Lugovitz Shabbos has a shave. He's sitting in a chair. I tell him what's happened. An atmosphere of Tisha B'av descended on the shop. Not our Tisha B'av here, the Heimische Tisha B'av, where you could hear the crying from the shul a block away, and tell him what's happened. The barber reaches for his scissors, immediately cuts his beard off, come home. As it turned out, it turned well off for us. The Gestapo made a mistake. It was the same name, but it was the wrong address. They were looking for a very wealthy man, and it was the wrong address for us. Luckily, there was a little door open in Gehenna, in Gundkirchen, and eventually Hashem Yisburach took me out from there. On what the Chisa survived, I don't know, but I was always thinking, I will mention it a bit later, it was dependent on the Kibbutz Av, which I gave. As the few weeks after this happened, the Germans come to the door, we should follow them. My father and I had a rucksack ready, and we said, we are joining the slave labor, which was called Bunker Tabor, and then they can't take us. We left. That's the last time we saw my family. I left my mother behind, a sister, a year younger, a brother, 4 years younger, and a little two-year-old brother. That's the last I saw them. We were taken to a football field where they sorted us out and decided whether they will take us or not. They took my father and me, they sent me on the side. There was a railway waiting already to take them to Auschwitz, whoever was refused. And as my father was waving to me, the officer said, "What's that? I got my son there. You want him to go with you?" "Yes." Called me over, said, "How old are you?" I lied. I said about 16. I was 16. I was 14. "You want to go with?" "Yes." "Okay, go." So then I joined my father. We went together. After that, we started going. They took us from village to village, from farm to farm, and the first Shabbos was very bad. It's the first Shabbos I experienced. There was a barn in the farm where all the cows are there, and the attic above were the rafters where they keep the hay, and there's a ladder outside where you mount up. So there was about 200 or 300 of us in the camp, in the group, and there was about 8 of us sleeping in the barn. So it was first Friday night. We found a couple of boxes, take a box. My father takes out a white serviette from his case, puts it down. Why he took a white serviette from home, I don't know, and took a big piece of black bread, never seen black bread before, puts it down, and starts singing Zmiras. I was heartbroken the first Shabbos to be like that. My father was probably did it to cheer me up, to have Zmiras. Well, it didn't cheer me up a lot, but still. And after that, now we have... So there was, as in the camp, we had to eat. They gave us plenty to eat, but of course it was strife. And there was about 8 of us, father, me, my Rebbe from home and his son, another 4 people, only at kosher. Well, the problem we have today in Eretz Yisrael, where all the not from are harassing the Haredim. Not from, I don't mean not from. That's too good a word. Most probably Apikorsen would be a better word, they harass them. But we had that 68 years ago as well. They saw that we were eating kosher, they objected to it, so they went and mustered me to the guards to say, look, there's a little boy of 14, they don't let him eat our food. Look what he looks like. All we had was bread and potatoes instead of having meat and all the food. Eventually this came on to the commander, and he made sure that I'm going to eat the same food as him. He had privileged the meal, obviously. He sat at the table. They put a log in the other side, and I joined him. So we had to eat. I enjoyed it. I was a kid. It meant nothing. But then, with the privilege that I had by knowing the commander, I had access to the kitchen as well. So I get a chance to take some bread and potatoes and various things to give it to us to eat so that we could get a bit better then. From there, we went from village to village working, cutting down sunflower, the sunflower, isn't it? You cut off the top and the rest. And then by train, we came on to Austria. From Austria, where was it? Yeah, we went up, they put us at upper hill where there was our camp, and we were doing work. We were doing tank traps. We got to the main road, made about 10 meter deep hole, so that when the tanks come, and then at night you cover it with twigs and earth, when the tanks come, they fall in, and then it stops the advance of the enemies, to say. It was very hard work. So a lot of people, well, if you could get away with it, you didn't work. So one day, they stayed behind quite a few people, and we were working, and the Germans came and took the name of the people, said, why aren't you working? They're not well. They took the names and went away. In the evening when we came home, so we realized what's going on. So next day when we went to work, the people who had their names taken, they went to work. Some of them were really ill, they stayed behind. But others who were well, their name wasn't taken, so they stayed behind. We go to work next day. We come home. They stopped us about a mile away from there for about an hour. We didn't know why, but they wouldn't let us go. There was also a little camp on the side, some barracks where they kept contagious people who are not well. When we came in, came home, what's happened? So we realized what they did. The Germans came, they called out all the names that they had, and they came, and then they were still short of about 10 people. So they just picked 10 people. They weren't fussy who it was. They took them. They took them all away. They took them to that barracks, and they were all shot. He came back. The Rebbe, my Rebbe from at home, he had his son with him. He was about 2 years older than me. He came home looking for him. He was taken away. It was the most heartbreaking experience when he came and saw his son was taken away. He was healthy, nothing wrong with him. He tore his clothes, he sat down, crying, screaming. Well, quieted down eventually, but it took a long time. We started marching towards Mauthausen, which was a famous camp, where we turned up, going to teach, and nobody heard of it, yet it was one of the worst ones going. Mauthausen, everybody heard. We're marching, no food, nothing. And I don't know, we didn't have the shoes, we had boots. During the week Shabbos, we had shoes. And marching for days and days, so your socks get a hole in the back, so it rubs against the heel. The heel, eventually, all the skin comes off the heel. Very, very painful. At night, you lie down, you want to take your shoes off. Otherwise, you can't rest. It takes about half an hour gently to take off the shoe. Eventually, you lie down, go to sleep. In the morning, it comes again. You have to put it on again. Most excruciating pain to have put on a shoe on a heel, which is just the skin and the meat showing. Eventually, I was always holding on to my father. We came into on the march into Mauthausen. It was up a hill, and the Germans were all on each side of the road, and they were just hitting us with big sticks, running in. All of a sudden, it was dark. I lost my father. I went in. Went to sleep, lie down. Can't find him anywhere. In the morning, I was told, your father is alive. They hit him very, very much. They beat him, but the medicine though inside, they already knew what's going on. They dragged him in, and they put him in the barracks, and they lied him down there. There was no room in the barracks the first night for me. We slept outside, but the Germans made sure by next day everybody had room in the barracks. Stayed there. I went to have a look. I walked up and down. There must have been about 10 people who were lying there, beaten. I didn't recognize him. So beaten. And slowly he recovered. And as it happens, some years ago I went to Yad Vashem with my wife, and we looked on all the horrible pictures on the wall. And as I take a corner, there is a model of Mauthausen. I showed my wife just opposite the gate. I showed her exactly where I went in, where I lied down for that night, about 5 yards away from the electric fence, just below a watchtower, and there I slept the first night. People asked me, have you been back to Hungary? I said, how can I go back? I just seen the model of Mauthausen, and there, and that made me ill for 2 weeks. How can I go back to Hungary, where I saw all that? We were in the cheder in Hungary, hundreds of us, a big garden, as big as the MH car park, at the side and back, playing, coming back a year later, full of grass, which we never seen a grass before. There was nobody playing there. Out of the hundreds of children, friends, one person came back of my age, and I think he was hiding somewhere. Otherwise, nobody came back. I was just lucky to come back. As we were marching, he was very ill, my father. He was dragging him along. And then a guard comes up and says, a horse and cart turned up and said, anybody who can't walk should get in the horse, on the cart, and then we take him further on. It's another 2 hours to walk. We put him down, and then you will meet up again. Well, people got on, and he told me, Shimon, put your father on. I didn't want to. Please put him on, you can't walk. You're dragging him. I'm saying, no, I'm not putting him on. He didn't. The cart was full. Some people ran after it to jump on as well. Why should they walk? We saw them going to the woods there. 10 minutes later, we saw it coming out empty. All being killed. As we were walking on the road there, this was about April, and I saw there was some water in the corner, some muddy water. I took my cup and scooped it up. So I thought, wait till it settles, and then I take the water off. I was right at the back because my father couldn't walk, so the German saw me. He knocked it out of my hand and hit me on my head. It wasn't a cane. They were walking with the pickaxe handles. He hit it on my head. How it comes, I should have turned around to watch his face. It must have been a horror on his face when he saw that I didn't drop dead. A hit like that had to hit my head open. Anyway, didn't. There must have been a malach there who absorbed that hit. Otherwise, I couldn't have existed. Food, well, we had the manna. What was the manna? We existed on it. I always say now, when the Yidden came out from Mitzrayim, they saw all the nisim, and then they went and made the boy the Zura, and they were sinned. How can they do it? Shem's Burach said, right, you are being punished, you are not going into Eretz Yisrael. You will stay in the midway, you're all going to die here. Shem's Burach and Zachmunas of the Yidden, so what did he do? He prepared them all nice food parcels. Every morning they had to go out, pick up the food parcel, and go home. We were in camp. We didn't do all that big sin, what they did, yet we had no food. Shem's Burach must have had Zachmunas of us, and what did he do? He treated us better. We didn't even have to go out in the field for the food. He just fed us from the air, whatever. Because for days, no food, no drink. One can't exist without food, without drink. Yes, we did. So Shesburg helped us. The Munna, well, it has no mamushes, it's abstract. It got no bodies, spiritual. Well, so was the Makos Choshech in Mitzrayim. 3 days it was dark, Choshech, nobody could see anybody. It has no mamushes, nothing. 3 days later it became solid and the Choshech did come solid and you could touch it. I think by us the Munna, also spiritual, but eventually it became solid. I was a solid Munna on 2 legs. 6 stone, skin and bone, and the Munna walked. Otherwise, on your own, you can't walk. It was just the Munna that walked. The camp, when we arrived there in Gutkirchen, I was soaked in skin. We sat down. It was about 12 foot wide, the barracks, very long, and just a door in the middle. And I just sat opposite the door. We sat down when we arrived, sat down, and I heard all the water running out from my trousers because it was absolute soaking. As we are sitting there, I don't know if it was the same day or next day, comes in, the door opens just opposite me, and a German with a pistol in his hand. So he was ready to shoot. He came in to kill. They just used to shoot at random. All of a sudden he looks down and there's somebody sitting on the floor with a talus over his head. He sees, looks, takes his pistol, puts it on top of his head and pulls the trigger. Nothing happens. Pulls it again. Nothing happens. He does something, He goes out. 2 minutes later, he comes back, looks down, gone. It wasn't the person. It must have been a malach, because the person, we didn't see him get up. Mind you, I didn't look down. I looked at the door. But somebody to disappear there, very tight. He couldn't go out of the doors because that was the only door. There was no room to sit next to anybody. There was no room. We were packed like sardines. He comes in, sees nobody there, turns his back and goes out. And Yuan Nui saved us, saved quite a few of us by not being killed. All of a sudden, I find myself in a queue for they said the Red Cross is giving us some honey, half a teaspoon of honey. After that, some time, I thought, I made it up. It must have been a mirage. How can we sit in the, get in the queue and go there and give them honey? And so I thought, oh, maybe they give us honey, it's poisoned, so that we should die quick, and they will have room for the next lot. Said, no, they wouldn't do that. Oh, maybe they are sadistic, and they want us to have a bit more koyach, so that we can suffer for another few more days. Because people just die from hunger, typhus, from everything. So then I thought, maybe I was dreaming, a mirage. But then I spoke with Yankov Yosef Weiss. He was in Manchester. He was liberated in the same camp. And he said, I never spoke to him before. Never know him for 50 years. I never spoke about camp. And then I told him about it. He said, yes, he was in the same queue. And when it came to his turn, some of them in front stormed the table. They couldn't resist it. He went for it. The Germans started shooting in the air. A bullet whizzed past his head. So he left. He didn't want to be killed. He went away. So at least I didn't dream it. It was true. My turn came, gave me half a teaspoon of honey, and I told him my father is in the barracks. He can't come. Can I have a half spoon? Red Cross gave me another half a spoon, a whole teaspoon of honey. I went to the barracks, happy, go up to my father and said, Dad, this is half a teaspoon for you, half for me. He didn't hear well, out of hearing. He took the whole teaspoon. I was very upset, but I said nothing. What upset me more was that somebody next to me, he saw what happened, and he started shouting, look, your father, your son was supposed to have half of it, not you the lot. I can just imagine what my father felt like. I was always wondering on what his I had that I was saved, that I survived the war. And then I thought, I didn't have many zechis, but maybe it was the kibedav that I said, I was quiet, I said nothing. Because there was another instance later on again, after the liberation, also, and a bit later. That time it was there. We were liberated Friday night, and people started walking out already of the camp. Well, we had no koyach, so we stayed. Then next day we started walking out. Actually, they can print it out. It's a Gunskirchen Lager, if you print it on the internet. Gunskirchen Lager, Gunskirchen Liberation. There you will tell the story of four American soldiers who liberated us. And when they went into the camp, they tell you what they saw. Actually, they nearly went past it when the tanks came. They nearly went past because it was such a pine forest, they didn't even know there was a camp there. But some even walked out, they dragged themselves out on the street Friday evening when the German guard ran away. So they met them, so then they found us. Otherwise they wouldn't have seen us. So we went next door, next day we went out, my father went to a field, it was May, So I dug up a few potatoes, just in case the Germans come back again, so I will have a few potatoes in my pocket. Then came about, not so far away, we found a big warehouse full of food, flour, sugar, various things. And everybody went in there and everybody helped. A lot of Yidden died after the war, within a week or two from eating, from food, for not having eaten so long. And because of that, when I was in hospital, they took all my clothes away so that I shouldn't be able to go into town to have some food. So we went to his warehouse. I saw some big bag of sugar, sack of sugar on the floor, slit open, with a person face down, eating the sugar and dead. Eating sugar after all this time starvation, he just got diarrhea, he died in the sack of sugar. Sweet death, it's called. Then all of a sudden everybody found some matches, pots. I started cooking. There was some goyim there as well. I don't know how they come there. Started cooking. So I went there. I also wanted to cook some potatoes. My father said, Shimon, you can't cook now. You can't be Machale Shabbos. We are liberated. Again, being upset. I mean, if that was today, it would be most probably a mitzvah to cook for a person like that. I didn't. Some people next to me, that are chunas, and they gave us some food. We had some. That time, so we were, they eventually turned up, so where we had taken us, there was 2 week hospitals, they took us in, and as we're going, we had to go undressed, everything, deloused us, because we were all lousy, we had no change for a year clothes, and then they pumped us with a pump, everything. I had some bags of pictures and various items. My father had a sefer, which wasn't printed yet, but his father wrote on the sederes, and that was his treasury, kept it. My father was in front of me, and as he went on, my turn came. So I didn't want to lose him. Once you lose anybody there with tons of people, you lost, so I quickly left everything there, ran after him. He couldn't walk much, took him to hospital. They said, I wanted to go with him. I said, what's wrong with you? Everything. But the state I was in, I would most probably be in intensive care today. He said, nothing wrong. This hurt here, that hurt here. So I went in. He lied on the bottom bunk, and I lied to the top bunk. And that was time. One night, he knocks on and says, Shimon, come down. I want to bench you. So I know why. He wants to die, bench him. And then it came to me that some years before at home, we had a shamus, and he had grown-up children. And as kids, we heard that he called in all his children to his bedside, benched them, and then he died. Here I thought, if he doesn't bench me, he can't die. And again, some very helpful people on the other side of the bunk says, look at the father, he tells his son he's going to die. I didn't go down. He didn't bench me. And then I think in the morning they took him out. I wanted to go after him. I couldn't. I had no clothes, just had a blanket. And they pushed me back. And that's the last I seen him. And now I think of it, it's completely out of my mind. I can't remember anything what happened from that second for till I found myself at the train station. It could have been days or weeks, I don't know. Nothing in my mind what happened. Whether I went back to bed, whether they took me here or there, eating, drinking, nothing at all for so long. Maybe from the shock I didn't continue. Then I find myself in the open again, staying there not far from a railway station, the train full. I was a kid, nobody. They were all older than me, well, 18, 20, 22 old people. So they couldn't, so there was a, I went on top of the train, even on the steps I couldn't stand. So they got the train, top of the train, it wasn't flat like here, it was domed with a strip across it. So I went on the ladder, it wasn't only me, a few of us went on top and stayed there. It was for a few days, I think. Some people, one was standing up, he went under a bridge, fell off. So anyway, that one eventually arrived in Budapest. Well, today I wouldn't go on top of a train for anything. The kibbet avohem, kibbet that we should honor parents. That's the only thing that saved me, I think. And it's for all young people here. It's very nice. We should honor parents, grandparents. If I would have told in camp 68 years ago, you know, I'm going to go home, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have children, grandchildren, they would have just felt very sorry for me. They would have thought, right, he lost his mind, he's a bit deranged, a bit potty, but he will live the rest of his life a Michiganer, and he will know about it, he will feel subconscious. But then I said, and I'm going to have great-grandchildren. They stopped feeling sorry for me. They knew I'm so mad that I wouldn't feel anything. That's it. That's the end of it. Baruch Hashem, I did come home. I'm married. I have children, wonderful children, wonderful grandchildren, Kanahara, great-grandchildren. And I think I still got the kibbet is after a father, even after death. So I think he got the kibbet now that I honored him with marrying, having children, and bringing up a whole generation. You got time. It comes to my mind, as we were resting one night, before when we got up, the minute that no food. In the morning we get up, and he said, in the evening, we are going to get food. Right? Comes the evening, no food in the morning. So we rest overnight, lie down. In the morning we get up. The lucky ones got up. The unlucky ones didn't. They froze to death. Mind you, sometimes we thought it was the other way around. Still now it turns out that we were the lucky ones who got up. And the only thing we should have really, let's just see, we should, I don't make any notes of myself, I'm not the Polish speaker, Akrava Kupas, I don't know that. I want to say something.
Have you got time for questions?
Well, I can't hear well, you have to repeat it for me.
I will. I'll try. I've got a Scottish accent, so I'll try and translate. Any questions?
What was life like before anything started happening? How did they live before anything changed?
What was life like before this all happened? Before that?
At home?
Yes.
Well, I was young. I wasn't in business, I was in cheder. And children, very nice. It was not so well off. It was hard life. I mean, it's, we were from, so we were, the cheder, we had a Jewish school. The Jewish school was 8 in the morning till 1. Go home for dinner at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock cheder. out of my class of about 40, there was only half a dozen of us who went to Cheder. The rest were, you know, secular, is what they say. And the Cheder was from 2007. In the summer, when there was a holiday, or the winter, which was very cold, and the school was closed for about 4 weeks, the Cheder wasn't closed, and we were there from 8 till 1, and from 2 till 7, we learned every day the Cheder.
Any other question?
What's your message for?
What would the message? What message would you give to us from your experience?
Message. Hope you have a good time, yes, and I hope you eat for it tonight. The message is that we should be really charitable to each other. We should be charitable not just in money, but also in deeds. We should like each other, respect each other. Today, it's different from years ago. When I was younger, yeah, there wasn't that charity as today. Today, all these young people, age 50, 60, they're all involved in Saskim, Shomrim, all these gemachs, everything, doing Atzula. Actually, I was a founder member of Atzula in 1980 or 82. I passed, not with honors, but I passed. After a week, I resigned, I didn't take it. I can't take pain, I can't watch people having pain, I can't watch blood. So I gave it up. I joined the Chevra Kedisha. There's no complaints there. Everything is all right. That time, actually, I've been a gabbe since then. After three taharas, they made me gabbe. Today, it's all done in Eastland or in the tahara shtibel. That time, we did all over the place. Krabzul Hospital, even the police mortuary, and quite a lot we did in private houses. Actually, there was one private house where it's in our street. I used to meet him at the butcher every Shabbos. He came from Russia. And his wife had a shop in Deansgate under there, and they were open Shabbos, always open, but didn't keep anything. He died. I did that hard in the house, and when they made the bruche, like a Rebbetzin, she made the bruche. And then I found out he was a captain in the Russian army. And they used to capture little boys to join the army. He used to take them out and send them out. So he had this history. So it's not always the big Stramel Yid where you got for the Tahari, you're very happy with it. But even somebody who doesn't keep anything, and they still had the still do the goodie. We can't judge anybody what they are by just by looking at them.
You had another question? Did people try to escape or did they try to fight back?
Didn't escape. There was nowhere to escape. What's the point? Where to? And to fight back, we had no care to fight. And who do you fight? There's nobody to fight there. There was a few guards over us. Actually, once we were marching from Tumathausen, there was the Wehrmacht was in charge of us. He was very good. As soon as he heard the plane go, he made us sit down to take until the plane went away so that it saves us marching. He was very, very good. But otherwise, and then we already heard shooting there, and we stayed at the road. And if we would have gone into the woods, they wouldn't have seen us. We could have avoided all this camp. We stayed at the side. A German came on a motorbike, the one who blew up the last bridge before the Russians came. He stopped at Sisson. So he said, oh, well, the officer went to the next town to see if he will have some food for us. A few hours later, the old Germans came back, started marching again. So there is your... There was nowhere to escape, no point.
Any last questions? What gave you the will and the hope and the strength to keep going?
To get home. We didn't know that what happened at home. We didn't know about Auschwitz, anything like that. We thought we'd go home. My father said, "Don't you worry, I'll be getting better. Once you go home, mother will cook a lovely chicken soup, I will get better in no time." So we wanted to get home to meet the brother. We didn't know. We just couldn't imagine that they could be that cruel, that they should just gas them and do away with them. We expected to become home and join the family. Back to normal, as you say. We didn't.
And I thank you very much on behalf of the Olam.
Thank you
for sharing. I know it's not easy. Shkoyach. Thank you.